Welcome to the Medical Journal of Australia podcast. The MJA is Australia's top peer-reviewed general medical journal, publishing groundbreaking research to the medical community since 1914. My name is Kate Swanell, and I am the MJA's news and online editor. We've heard a lot lately about burnout in the medical professions, but what is burnout exactly? And how can we help medical students and junior doctors deal with it and get through it? The authors of a new perspective published in the MJA have a few ideas about that, and they are my guests on the pod today. Professor Michael Bagent is a psychiatrist and medical educator at Flinders University, and he is a board member at Beyond Blue. Dr. Ruth Bagent is a GP and part-time medical educator at the University of Adelaide. Welcome, both of you. What prompted you to write this perspective?
I suppose because of the work that we've been doing at I've been involved with Beyond Blue, the doctor's health approach, and the research that was done some time ago, and also the teaching I do at the university and other places around this issue. Maybe you might like to know the reason we chose the focus in this way, which was to focus particularly on a message to the senior doctor or for senior doctor.
We're having a lot of conversations at the moment about words like resilience, and a lot of the, certainly the med students and the junior doctors are sort of saying, well, actually, that's a bit sort of victim blamey, you know?
Yeah.
Perhaps the seniors need to take a little responsibility as well. What's your take on that?
Well, look, when you look at approaches to burnout, the approaches really to date really have fallen into you can help the individual cope better, a person-orientated approaches which really focus on resilience. Sometimes people call it grit and other approaches, but otherwise you focus on the workplace and you make changes there. But we thought that really what was missing in the discussion at the moment is really the role that the more senior doctors can take in looking after their apprentices. And prompting this really was when you stood back and you looked at the research that we did and with Beyond Blue, this was chaired by Professor David Clark from Melbourne, and I was involved with it. The research showed that the rates of burnout were very high in the young doctors under the age of 30. But as you went on and you looked through the older generations, the scores on burnout measures dropped significantly. So it would be very easy for the senior doctors who aren't experiencing any discomfort to, on the one hand, to sit back and say, well, it's not bothering me. We went through all these hard times and we got through and look at us. And at the same time, these are the doctors that, by virtue of getting through and being able to work as they are and feeling much better about their work-life balance and so forth, they had a lot to offer potentially to the more junior doctors, and also have a very important role in advocacy, because when it comes down to it, medicine is still really an apprenticeship style of learning. And we, the senior doctors, we have junior people that that we're teaching, and part of that is doing something to make sure that they're okay and they're managing okay.
Yeah.
And so that was really what shaped our thinking.
It was interesting. We have regular issue planning meetings at the MJA, and most of our medical editors and, of course, our editor, they're all working doctors as well as editors. And one in particular who's a pretty senior guy said, you know, it's funny, I used to take my juniors out to lunch regularly and now I don't for whatever reasons. You know, I'm too busy or I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And he said, you know, maybe that's something we just need to do. Maybe that's just something we need to bring back in to communicate with these younger doctors.
Absolutely. It's part of the civility and the workplace kind of relationships with fostering those. And, look, I had the same experience. I look back very fondly on my mentor when I first started as a consultant, and that was Professor Ross Calusi. And we used to all go out to lunch, including the juniors and the seniors. We used to all go out for lunch regularly, and that was just taken for granted. We'd all sit and talk about all sorts of things, but it fostered a fantastic environment. The other thing that he got across to me, which I think has always been important, is that I work in a hospital predominantly, and working in the hospital, it really is like you've got to take the approach that it's like a village, you know, and we look after each other in the village. And it's a fairly simplistic idea, but it talks about being prepared to look after the others, and I suppose the seniors or the elders have an eye out and a concern for the juniors. It's a slightly different kettle of fish, perhaps, in the private setting, and I don't know whether Ruth you wanted to.
Yeah, Ruth, what's been your experience?
Yes, I've supervised GP registrars. I think that part of the issues with burnout for junior doctors relates to the lack of control over their environment. Often they, if they're working in a clinic where the supervisor doctor doesn't give them enough time, or they, the practice manager expects them to perform like a more experienced doctor, there can be problems. They still are inexperienced. They still need to have some hand-holding. They're needing to grapple with the advent of new technologies. They don't have an appreciation of the costs of investigating yep. and expensive medications coming from the hospital system. And so the GP registrars that I've seen who have become been stressed, it's often because people need to step back and forget that they're not there to provide necessarily a service. There's always a problem in general practice between the fact that it's a business and therefore, you know, unfortunately, some junior doctors are regarded as just an extra set of hands. They are there to learn. So it's interesting. I've just put up on Facebook on a GP page about the working part-time versus full-time and whether I didn't actually frame it in terms of burnout, but I suggested that maybe GPs actually work part-time as a form of self-protection, because as in general practice we are increasingly dealing with an ageing population with yes. complex medical problems. We have to turn over people relatively quickly compared with the specialties. And I was very surprised at the high response rate of people agreeing with me that they work part-time and in general practice, but also diversify their practice, such as by teaching and assisting surgically to maintain their control over their work-life balance.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and so young registrars often don't have that opportunity to do that, or they're often having to manage young families. And so burnout, unfortunately, they're at risk if they are actually juggling onerous demands at home, young children, as well as perhaps a less than caring general practice.
So let's talk a little bit more about burnout specifically. What is it? I mean, is it a symptom? Is it an illness? Is it a totally separate thing?
Burnout's not a mental illness.
Right.
It really is best described as a syndrome or a response.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look in the literature and if you look at really what constitutes burnout, you really see it fall into three areas. I mean, first of all, there's a sense of exhaustion. It's a physical and emotional exhaustion, and it's in response to the stresses of excess work. The underlying cause is doing your job as a doctor. That's the underlying cause of
yes.
it. But, and so then there's this sort of sense of cynicism that evolves, almost as a protective mechanism. And people become callous about their work. They distance themselves. And they develop this thing that's called detached concern. But it really is this sort of, it's going through the motions of being concerned, but to protect themselves from the workload and all the demands of it, the only way to get through is to care a little bit less and become cynical about the impact of intervention. Then the third part, which then follows on from this sort of sense of doing the minimum rather than doing your best, is this sort of sense, well, people reflect on what they're doing in their practice and what level of return or enjoyment they're getting from it, and they conclude they're not getting much from it and they're not contributing much. And they get this, people get this sense that they're not very effective as a doctor anyway, and their view of themselves becomes that they're incompetent, they're ineffective, and it's almost self-perpetuating because they're not doing their best and they're doing that to survive. And their self-evaluation is that they're not doing a good job at the at the end of the day, and it makes them feel worse and worse. And of course, all that is made worse when there's no resources, mm-hmm. there's little support, there's not many professional opportunities, and then ultimately it can act as a pathway into or a precipitant for depression, because
right.
work becomes a huge burden rather than a reward, and
yeah.
People dislike themselves, lose confidence, and develop all the kind of features of depression or an anxious kind of presentation with a lot of avoidance. And they could they may well then find themselves moving from what is just like a syndrome, unpleasant, disabling as it is, into a clinical disorder which requires treatment, or even suicidal thoughts which require intervention.
Does all burnout go to depression?
No. In fact, if you look at when we look at the results of most of the research, we see very high burnout rates in doctors. For example, 30% of the Australian doctors in the survey that we did, and we sampled, we got about almost 30% of the Australian doctors and medical students responding to our national survey. And when you look at about 30% of the doctors overall reported at least one symptom for significant on one of the measures of burnout, and yet the percentage of them who reported being diagnosed or having depression was only 6%. So it's far more common to find burnout than it is the clinical disorder. And anxiety disorder featured in about 4%, not as many as that, so not as many as 6%. So it's a common syndrome.
And is it easy to mistake for depression?
It is very easy to mistake for depression. Yeah, it is very easy to mistake. Yeah. And it's important to distinguish between the factors, because if you're trying to treat somebody with your treatments that you have for depression and the problem is actually burnout or driven by their workplace, you're really dancing around the edges, and it's not going to make a huge difference, I'm sorry to say. Antidepressants are certainly not going to have an impact. And the psychological approaches that you employ may well, in a way, address their burnout, you know, effectively, but certainly antidepressants are not going to have any impact or provide any benefit.
So if the answer to burnout is to improve the work environment, how is that practical in terms of a doctor's work environment, which, from what I can gather, is pretty inflexible? You know, they don't necessarily have a backup, so they can't just whisk away for a holiday. How do we improve the work environment of these young doctors?
It's not an easy question to answer, I suppose. And if you're looking at what kind of things might be effective to do in the workplace, I'm going back a step. I mean, first of all, there is a benefit in some work hardening for people as they're training. It's unavoidable. You can't play a football grand final unless you've trained in difficult situations and worked hard, but not unreasonable ones.
And Michael, can I just add, the other thing that's important in medicine is also to learn from your mistakes.
Yes.
And unfortunately, in our current medico-legal climate, junior doctors are pulled over the coals if there's a mistake, but that is actually part of the learning process. And so people in the echelons above need to be supportive of that and accept that that's going to happen.
Professor Michael Bagent and Dr. Ruth Bagent are my guests today on the pod. They have written a perspective on burnout in the medical professions, which is now available at mja.com.au.
There's kind of, you know, there are certainly workplaces that are very unhealthy and will generate burnout, and where there's excess workloads, where there's not an opportunity for professional development, where you have minimal control over your life, and there's not really clear role delineations or task delineations, there's confusion. You don't have anybody on your side, particularly senior people. There have been various things that have been tried all over the place. In America, for example, there's an interesting intervention that was focusing on trying to improve civility in the workplace.
Yes.
That program went off into Canada as well, which showed some benefit. And it's an interesting thing. And I think what that's about is people being interested, polite, developing an atmosphere of collegiality, commonality, common interest, outcomes for the better of the patient, for the best of the patient. So those sorts of things can be helpful. I mean, there's also been some really interesting research done by, published by Christine Maslach and a writer from Melbourne called Leiter, L-E-I-T-E. And they were really looking at factors that were a combination of things, a mismatch between the doctor and the workplace. So if you're looking at workplaces, it might be that you try to match up a kind of workplace that suits the personality or the style of the doctor, if that's possible. This is something that might be possible if you have to do your internship or your RMO.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But then other things that might be good, like giving people as much control and autonomy as you can over what you do and how you do it in the day-to-day things, and rewarding good outcomes. That's another factor that's been in their research shown to be good. Now, the other factors, interestingly, were around, you know, ensuring there's fairness, that there's established workplace relationships, and that the workplace values align with the doctors. And for me, I think, and when Ruth and I were talking about what we were going to write in the paper and important things to come out, one of the critical factors in our view that can contribute to some of the burnout is where there's this misalignment where junior doctors are coming there to help patients. Hmm. And in their minds, they're starting, this is what, as medical students, their levels of burnout and cynicism are relatively low.
Yes.
They go into internship and their RMOs and their registrar years, and somehow or other, because of the high work demands and the responsibilities, that get beaten out of them. They're not able to maintain a focus on what's the best outcome for the patient, because inserted into it becomes the needs of the service and the administrators and their seniors and the nursing staff and perhaps even in the background they're being evaluated and all these things intervene so that junior doctors cannot do a lot of the time is do the best thing they think to do what they think is the best for the patient. A bit easier to do that when you're a senior clinician. Because you carry a bit more weight, you've been around a bit longer.
And I think also the problem can be compounded when the senior staff themselves are burnt out. And that happened.
Asking the seniors to take some responsibility and to help protect or look after their juniors kind of presupposes that the seniors agree there's a problem.
Yeah, well, I suppose you're right. And in some, there is the attitude, like the four Yorkshiremen that are sitting up there saying, well, in our day, we slept in a hole in the ground and we ate coal for breakfast.
It's luxury.
It's luxury. And I find myself in the ward round. They're, you know, I've asked the registrar how was the on-call the night before and all the medical students are sitting around and they say, it was pretty tough. I saw X number of people and I can't help myself. And I say, well, look, when I was a registrar, we had to do these shifts that lasted for 36 hours.
Yeah.
And then we saw all these patients. And as well as that, we had a bike and a walkie-talkie. We didn't even have mobile phones. And all that's the truth. But it doesn't help them. And also the other thing was that back then we didn't have the computer system. We didn't have the nasty sort of accountability stuff that there is now and the finger-pointing and the high demands and all those things. So. But you're right. Some doctors, some senior doctors don't. But I can tell you, most doctors have concern about their juniors. Most senior doctors have concern about their juniors their work there, and would take an interest in them if there was a call to action around it. I think some will say for sure, well, they've got it easy.
Yeah.
But that's okay. That's their view. But I think for many doctors, they're aware that the junior doctors find it hard, and if they look back on their own experience, they'd reflect at the times when they found it difficult. There's nothing wrong with trying to make it as good as you can for the junior doctors. Now, that's got to be balanced against, as we said before, against the need at times, and there is a need for students to get for the registrars and junior doctors to get a good exposure. There is some benefit and merit in developing grit, and there's nothing, you have to do it on the job. You can't learn to play grand final footy unless you're playing football. You can't just talk about it, but it's got to be supervised and humane and supported by the senior or the coach, if you want to carry on with the analogy.
Do you think medical schools are turning out graduates with grit?
That's an interesting question. I'm just going to reflect on my teaching third year medical students about resilience, and I certainly echo the just trying to recall her name, who was cited in the medical review about resilience being a dirty word. I think the students actually turn around and say, well, that's all very well, but we don't actually have time to, their experience has been even at third year, time to exercise, time to meditate, to do all those things. So perhaps over to you, Michael.
I think you can't really – I think it's hard to turn out medical students with grit, because what they're doing is they become medical students who have grit. And developing the grit and the other things really has to happen when you're working, or is best to happen. You can prepare them for it. And I think getting prepared is them being aware that, you know, about a process of developing grit in a non-pathological way. The medical students that I have a lot of involvement with teaching medical students.
Mm-hmm.
And I do a lot of, like, in a similar way to Ruth, I do a lot of professional development stuff with them, and they're all petrified about working as an intern. It's not going to help them to petrify them further. The reality has to be that, yes, it's hard, but there are ways of making it less hard, and at the end of the day, it does become a very beneficial experience for you. And in a similar way, you can prepare people for the benefits of training, like with grit, yes. developing resilience and that kind of long-term view of things and perseverance. And so they're actually more aware of those things and can look for those things and see them in a beneficial, positive spin rather than seeing them as being a harmful, potentially dangerous thing to their own mental health, which is not what it's always about. In a similar way, when you talk about anxiety, you don't want everybody to think that all symptoms of anxiety are pathological when part of being human to experience anxiety from time to time. It's when it's persistent, excessive and disabling, that's when it's a problem.
So basically we've got to teach them a bit of grit and have the seniors help them out and try and make the practices of hospital training a little more, what's the word, gentle, fun?
Yeah, I think the hospital practices need to be, well, I mean, for want of a better turn of phrase, more civility,
yeah.
more collegiality, more of the medical thing. I think to some extent it's very important that we have people in charge of hospitals who are, or hospital services who are clinicians and not accountants. And
yes.
Accountants are very important in the system, but they're not, that they don't actually have the eye that clinicians do for what's best for the patient. If you do what's best for the patient, it resonates well with doctors because that's really what their job is.
Yes.
And they're doing a good job. And sometimes there is an unfortunate reality. There's a certain amount of money, but some of the decisions that are made are probably not beneficial for the staff or the patients at the end of the day, therefore, because you've got to remember that when people burn out, they are not as good at their job as they could be.
Yes.
And the patients are not going to get the best or the outcomes they might have if the doctor was not burnt out. I don't think they're dangerous to patients, but I think there is a subjective difference.
Just going back to the GP registration issue, because that actually does comprise quite a large number of more junior doctors, I think it is important that we remember that supervisors are there to supervise. It's not a, you know, they're not there just to keep a seat warm and turn patients through from a business point of view. So mentoring is extremely important. Also, I would remind young doctors working in general practice, because of the advent of being able to have remote access, that they need to learn to leave their work at work, not check results after hours. And also enjoy being a doctor because it is a wonderful privilege. Find meaning in your work, and with time, certainly as you become more experienced, it is easier. And yet in those juniors, especially when they're post fellowship, they still do need to have extra input and mentoring. And instead of when you just qualify being left to practice as solo practitioners, you do need to still have that ongoing collegiality.
Michael, any further thoughts, final thoughts?
I do think that senior doctors can make a big difference in the lives of their junior doctors and make a big difference in a positive way. And it is not going to require a great change.
It seems like it almost needs to go back to how it was. I mean, if people are saying, oh, I used to take my juniors out to lunch and I don't know where that went.
those elements, definitely. Those are beneficial elements because they foster relationships, support. The senior doctors hear more about what it was like for the junior doctor, as well as the junior doctor learn more about how to manage and, you know, learn get a bit of expertise from the senior doctor as well. The workplaces haven't facilitated that very well, but I do think that they're getting more interested in it. Definitely, there's a big summit in Melbourne that Beyond Blue was involved with facilitation of it. Mukesh Haikerol, who's been chair of our doctors' advisory group and is on the board with me at Beyond Blue, has been very, very involved. Jessica Dean, also a board member on the Beyond Blue board, junior doctor, also played a big part in a lot of these things. And the hospital administrators have responded with a great deal of interest because they realise and recognise that you've got to have a healthy medical workforce to provide good health care for people. But the trouble is it's been all over the place. Some colleges are taking a great deal of interest. The College of Surgeons, for example, have been doing a lot. I've spoken at a number of their conferences on this topic. And, you know, so there's things, bits and pieces happening around the place. But really, doctors need to take control at some level and decide for themselves how to change the culture. That's an important part of the overall picture.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Kate.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.